Welcome to the latest edition of Through the Smoke with Deputy Fire Chief Billy Goldfeder, addressing issues impacting all firefighters' safety, health, and morale.
We are here with a group of firefighters, police officers, EMTs, paramedics, nurses, and their families to talk about firstresponders.com, the website devoted to the financial life of first responders. Excuse me, what's your name? Okay, Jim, tell me, what do you like best about firstresponders.com? Is it the credit card that tells everybody you're a first responder, or their competitive mortgage rates? Oh, it's the Responder Rewards Program. Exclusive discounts you and your family get from hundreds of retail outlets, from home improvement to electronics to clothing. Up to 40% off. Great. Is this your little doggy? Hey, buddy. Everybody seems to love the benefits of firstresponders.com. Right, everybody?
You speak your own language, we speak it too. That's because firstresponders.com was created by first responders. With benefits like great mortgage products, discounts at retailers, and the first responders credit card. It's not just a credit card, it's a badge. Firstresponders.com, giving back to the people who give.
Welcome to Through the Smoke. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder, radio at firehouse.com. This week, our guests are Dr. Dennis O'Neill, Superintendent of the National Fire Academy, Chief Richie Blattis, Battalion Chief at FDNY, and Chief Mike Smith, retired Deputy Fire Chief in Washington, D.C. We're going to talk about fire officer education and training. But first, some news and commentary. And by the way, this show was actually recorded in Baltimore at Firehouse Expo. But right now, we're recording the news and this portion on Friday, August 3rd, for those of you that track that. So the interviews and discussions with Dr. O'Neill, Chiefs Blattis, and Smith were last week in Baltimore, and now we're recording this section on Friday, August 3rd. And, of course, Through the Smoke is sponsored by the good folks and seasoned veteran firefighters of First Responder Financial. Check them out. The link is above and below the posting of this show. Tragic news again. This morning, two volunteer firefighters were killed in Texas when a burning home in Flint collapsed on them, which is not far from Tyler, Texas. As of this recording of the show, the identities of the deceased are being withheld pending notification. The Flint Gresham Volunteer Fire Department responded to a call of a house fire around 1:45 this morning. Firefighters called for assistance, mutual aid from Bullard and Noonday Volunteer Fire Departments, and the two firefighters entered to attack the fire. Once the two firefighters were inside, and again, this is very preliminary, we're only a few hours since this fire occurred. Once inside the fire, communications with the firefighters was lost. Noonday Volunteer Fire Department arrived on the scene. They entered the house looking for the other firefighters who they lost communications with. The roof collapsed, and there was some sort of a fire event, some sort of an explosion, and the two firefighters were killed at the scene. It sounds like that they were very heroic in trying to go inside and see where these other brother firefighters were, or brother and sister firefighters, whatever. But they unfortunately lost their lives, and of course, more facts will come out of this as time goes on. So our hearts go out to the Noonday firefighters in Texas, and all firefighters in East Texas related or involved somehow in the loss of, again, two more firefighters. But it sounds like they were in there trying to look for the other firefighters, and certainly that's, in our line of thinking, heroic. Obviously, it's always depending upon conditions and things like that, but we sure have all of them in our hearts and prayers, and hope we can get more facts and find out exactly what happened so we can learn from it. I want to share with you a little commentary as well. We're going to talk about Charleston just for a minute. Now, you know, the fire in Charleston that took the lives of nine firefighters shook all members of the fire service in one way or the other. Most firefighters were shocked, saddened, and upset. Why wouldn't we be? We have lost nine more firefighters in a situation that some folks feel was avoidable. From looking at the video and pictures, it feels that, well, maybe it was avoidable. But as we have spoken on and written about in the past, we need to await the facts. Most firefighters know that it is easy to sit back and comment and offer opinions. And if we do that in our firehouses and take that information that we initially know and think what happened and maybe even by the pictures know what happened, and we apply that and what we've learned so far to our own personnel, we can probably avoid that from happening to our own personnel locally. you know, what happens and what happened at a fire and what those who were not there think happened at a fire can be exactly the same, or it can be far, far apart. It all depends. Sometimes it depends on not knowing all the information. Other times the facts and information mean nothing if people just do not want to know the facts or accept the facts. Sometimes folks who are in our business or who have or have had some affiliation to our business could care less about the facts and just want to do whatever they can to keep stoking the fires and stirring it up. Those are nice folks. Not really. As we wrote a few weeks ago and we spoke about on this show, as tempting as it was and is for anyone to comment on all the videos and photos, out of respect for the line of duty death firefighters' families, there's no rush. Some argue that, or argue with us on that, by saying lives can be saved if we share and talk about what we think we saw in Charleston or any other fire for that matter. Well, you know, if you saw something on the Charleston fire videos, the pictures, the movies, whatever you saw, and you don't agree with what you saw, don't do that. Don't do whatever you think should not be done or should not have been done. Don't do it in your department. There are tactics shown in the videos and photos that I wouldn't do in some cases, but I wasn't there. But if you don't like what you saw in the Charleston videos or any other fire videos for that matter, do whatever you think is best in your town so that whatever is seen in Charleston or Hackensack or Walbaum's or whatever is not repeated at your fire department. But until the facts come out in Charleston from outside experts, nothing is factual. Does it look like things should have maybe been done differently? Sure. Some of it may seem pretty obvious. After all, there are 9 firefighters who gave their lives, and many, many questions remain. Actually, you know, there are more than just a few videos you can look at of any fire department where things could have been done differently. I mean, I've been on calls where I'd certainly do things differently. Actually, most calls I've been on, we would do something a little different. But it takes experts looking at an entire situation, evaluating, determining, and totally investigating the facts for us to see the true picture of what happened versus a snapshot or video. And you know, with 9 firefighters tragically lost, the Charleston firefighters' families deserve the truth by experts. The fire service deserves the truth. Everybody deserves. We need to know what happened. Exactly what happened. Not what we saw, not what we think we saw, but based upon a professional investigation, tell us what happened. So who are these experts? In what appears to be a very positive move, the mayor of Charleston, Joe Riley, has contracted with some of the best in our nation involved in firefighter fatality research and investigation. The mayor stated publicly that he wants an external, independent, and thorough analysis of the fire and the evaluation of the Charleston Fire Department. An external, independent, and thorough analysis of the fire and an evaluation of the Charleston Fire Department. Wow, that's pretty bold. And that's probably what needs to be done, though. If that is what will happen, and the mayor is truly sincere about his intentions, I don't think anything else can be asked for at this point. When statements are made like that publicly by elected officials, by this mayor, or whoever else, with the families, the public, the media, and the firefighting world watching and listening intensely, the options for them to do anything else becomes very, very limited. So who is going to be the initial primary on-scene team in Charleston investigating the fire? Well, the project, I'm just going to review the names and a little bit of their background for you because I think it's important. You need to know who's involved in this. The team leader will be Chief Gordon Rowley. Gordon's a nationally recognized fire service management expert and a fire protection engineer. Gordon was the fire chief in Shreveport, Louisiana. He's a National Fallen Firefighters Foundation Firefighter Safety Program Specialist, and he's very involved with the IASC Safety, Health, and Survival Board. He spent 16 years with the Phoenix Fire Department, serving as an assistant to the fire chief. Then in 89 and 91, he was fire chief in Shreveport, Louisiana. He was director of fire service consulting for a company called Tri-Data from 92 to 96. And now he's an independent consultant. He's been very, very active in the cause of firefighter health and safety for many, many, many years. And he's taken the lead on this. Who else is going to be involved? Well, there's Assistant Chief Kevin Roach. I'm sorry. Assistant Fire Marshal, my correction, Kevin Roach, with the Phoenix Fire Department. Kevin has been the assistant to the fire chief. He was Chief Brunicini's assistant for many years. He's a consultant and a researcher, and also has a very strong focus and background in firefighter fatality investigation. He has a master's degree in political science and public administration. Like Gordon, he's degreed. And really, again, brings a lot to the table. Who else? Chief Tim Sendelbeck, who's going to be handling or overseeing, looking at the training to see what's been done down there in the past. Tim is currently the president of ISFSI, and he's a very well-respected fire training consultant, former fire chief, and he, too, is degreed with his bachelor's and associate's degrees in fire administration and arson and EMS. He's pursuing his master's at this time, too, and he's enrolled in the Executive Fire Officer Program. He also has won many awards, like the other two individuals I mentioned. Then there's Assistant Fire Chief Brian Crawford from Shreveport. He's going to be the administration specialist. Brian is an assistant chief and the assistant to the fire chief of Shreveport, Louisiana. And he is a recipient of the U.S. Fire Administration's Harvard Fellowship to attend, and he attended their senior program at the John F. Kennedy School of Government. He holds a Master of Arts in Industrial Psychology, a Bachelor's in Organizational Management, an Associate degree in Paramedic. And, you know, I mentioned all these degrees, and that's important, but all of these people also are seasoned firefighters. So they understand what it's like to stretch lines. These aren't just a bunch of professors we pulled out of a box, that the mayor pulled out of a box. These are experienced people. Then there's a gentleman who's going to oversee the looking at fire prevention and code enforcement. That's Mike Chiramonte. Mike is a former fire chief of Lynbrook, New York, 36 years of experience. And he, too, has been very active in the fire service. He is was a past chairman of the IFC VCOS. He is second vice president of the Eastern Division of the IFC, serves on Fire Chief Magazine's advisory board. He's an adjunct instructor with the National Fire Academy and very active in, up at the National Fire Academy, I might add. And he was a school teacher for 34 years. And Mike has his Bachelor of Science in Communications Education and a Master's in Education. So again, we're bringing, so we are gaining expertise to find out what happened. The families are, the Charleston firefighters are, everybody is, and these folks are going to figure out what happened down there, hopefully. Then there's Pete Perringer to manage the information of this. Pete is the PIO from Montgomery County, Maryland. He has 35 years of experience in public safety. He's a recipient of numerous awards and recognitions, including a Medal of Valor for fire operations and services. So, you know, while it might seem to some of you that these folks might serve at the mayor's pleasure down there in Charleston, forget it. These folks are busy. They have plenty to do in their professional and personal lives. None of them would waste their time if they were not given full authority to seek and provide the facts and the truth about this fire without any interference. None of them would touch this assignment or this investigation if there was the slightest concern that they what they would say and what they have to say would not be made public. None of them. Now, take that group of experts, add the experts at NIST, National Institute of Standards and Technology, who are evaluating the fire, then the experts at NIOSH, who are going to be investigating the fire from NIOSH's standpoint, and put it all together, odds are the facts are going to come out in a coordinated and professional manner. Maybe they'll all even get together and put one report out. Who knows? That would be cool. And it would show that there is one way to investigate firefighter deaths, or even a better way, perhaps, by getting different groups together to determine what happened. Odds are the above team that I just mentioned will communicate with the NIST folks and the NIOSH folks, and from all these areas of expertise, the facts will come out so we can learn and not repeat history once again. You're listening to Through the Smoke. This is Radio at Firehouse.com. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. We're going to be back in just a minute with Dr. Dennis O'Neill, Superintendent of the National Fire Academy, Chief Richie Blattis from FDNY, he's a battalion chief in the Bronx, and Chief Mike Smith, retired deputy chief in Washington, D.C. We're going to talk about fire officers' education and training. We'll be back in just a minute.
We are here with a group of firefighters, police officers, EMTs, paramedics, nurses, and their families to talk about firstresponders.com, the website devoted to the financial life of first responders. Excuse me, what's your name? Okay, Jim, tell me, what do you like best about firstresponders.com? Is it the credit card that tells everybody you're a first responder, or their competitive mortgage rates? Oh, it's the Responder Rewards Program. Exclusive discounts you and your family get from hundreds of retail outlets, from home improvement to electronics to clothing.
Up to 40% off. Great. Is this your little doggy? Hey, buddy. Everybody seems to love the benefits of firstresponders.com. Right, everybody?
You speak your own language, we speak it too. That's because firstresponders.com was created by first responders. With benefits like great mortgage products, discounts at retailers, and the first responders credit card. It's not just a credit card, it's a badge. Firstresponders.com, giving back to the people who give.
This is Radio at Firehouse.com. This is Through the Smoke. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. Welcome. We're live at Firehouse Expo in Baltimore. We've got a live audience with us. There's so many people in this room, the fire marshal had to evacuate half of them, so we're down to about 2,000 people. We have this week as our guest Dr. Dennis O'Neill, Superintendent of the National Fire Academy, Battalion Chief Richie Blattis, Chief of the 1-5 Battalion in the Bronx, FDNY, and retired Deputy Chief Mike Smith of the Washington, D.C. District of Columbia Fire and EMS Service. And we're going to be talking to them about fire officer training in just a few minutes. But first, I want to, every once in a while I run into a really cool product. And now I'm not endorsing this product as far as the radio show, and they're definitely not paying to be on here. Our show is sponsored by First Responder Financial, which is an outstanding company owned by Dennis Smith, who founded Firehouse Magazine, which is built into all the other Firehouse organizations and groups. And we appreciate every week's sponsorship by Dennis Smith and First Responder Financial. Personally, I use their credit card and I use some of their services. I wouldn't endorse a product that I didn't use. And I strongly suggest firefighters, if you're going to carry a credit card, why wouldn't you carry a credit card where you can pick up the phone, talk to the owner of the company if there's a problem, and be basically being operating within a firefighter atmosphere. At least that's my attitude. I'd always rather deal with firefighters than anybody else. And Dennis and Pete Hayden, retired Chief of Department, New York City, developed this company. As Dennis is the CEO of First Responder Financial. So if you're looking for mortgages, you're looking for financial assistance, or just applying for a credit card, consider First Responder Financial as the company to provide that service. So again, we appreciate their sponsorship each week here on Through the Smoke at RadioFirehouse.com. But I do, every once in a while, run into a really cool product. And I want to share that with the listeners of Through the Smoke. And this is an interesting product. You know, volunteer fire departments, although they're faced with many, many challenges, one of the biggest challenges is when the tones go off, who's showing up? Who's responding for the call? And some fire departments, you pick up the phone, you dial the dispatcher, but that's a delay. You need to get in your car and get to the firehouse. But on the other hand, many of you have been in the firehouse, or maybe you're the first arriving person at your firehouse, an alarm comes in, and you're standing there waiting, and you're looking at your watch, and you're looking down the street, watching for another car responding in. Who's turning out for this alarm? You just don't know, and that's a problem. Well, there's a company in upstate New York called Emergency Responder Reply System, www.iamresponding.com, and I was at Pennsylvania Fire Expo, which is a great show, out in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, every May. Hosted by the Lancaster County Firefighters Association. And I ran into this product, and I'm telling you, I was blown away. This is a product that basically, imagine this, your tones go off, you pick up your cell phone, you flip it open, you push a predetermined number, like you push a button to call your mother, your daughter, whoever you're calling, your sister, and it dials this number. It answers within 2 seconds, and you push either 1, I'm going to the scene, or 2, I'm reporting to the station. You hang up. In 10 seconds, your dispatcher on their screen sees that Billy Goldfeder is responding to the station. Now imagine, your tones go off, and let's say you've got 8 members available for this first alarm assignment. Within 15 seconds, your chiefs, your dispatcher, your members will know exactly who's available to respond within your designated period of time. In other words, if you can't be here in 10 minutes, don't hit your phone button. We don't want to know about that. But if you can make the first truck, and you set up a policy in your own department. You hit your phone button if you're available to be in quarters within 3 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever it is. So beep, bop, your tones go off, your members pick up their phones, any cell phone, you're just dialing a number, hit the phone, hang up, boom, you're on your way. And within that 15-second period, your dispatcher knows you have 3 people responding, 5 people, 10, or nobody. And now instead of waiting 3, 5, or 10 minutes, you hit a second alarm or you hit mutual aid right away. and you're helping your members because it takes firefighters to take care of firefighters, so you're assuring a good response to that alarm, but you're taking care of your citizens by getting apparatus there quickly and effectively. So my first guest is Brad Pinsky, Vice President of www.iamresponding.com, which is the Emergency Responder Reply System. Welcome, Brad.
Thank you. Thank you.
Brad's a firefighter. He's also an attorney. Sorry, that was a technical error there. But he is a firefighter, so we'll put that up first. And Brad, you came up with this product. Why?
We were sitting in our firehouse. I'm a lieutenant of an engine company. We're sitting there. We get a call for a bad rollover. We're not getting out. We're looking up. We have no idea who's coming. 5 minutes goes by.
So looking up and down the street, see who's going to show up.
Exactly.
Looking for the blue lights or whatever.
And,
right?
And nothing's coming. It's a beautiful Saturday afternoon. Nobody's around. We have no idea if we should roll, if we should call our mutual aid. Volunteers, we're territorial. I'm not giving up my call till I have to, till I know nobody's coming. We wait 10 minutes. It flips to mutual aid. We start going way short anyway. And all of a sudden, people are coming in, passing us, flipping us off, frankly. And because they're coming in, not, you know, we left without them. They didn't respond.
Ah, brotherhood.
Yeah, we're a tight group. So it arose out of the frustration of not knowing who's coming. And you've described it perfectly. We're going to know in 10 seconds if we got enough people, if we should be waiting because other people are coming, if we're not going to get out. To quote my chief, who says, I'm sick and tired of going to a scene, sitting there with my thumb up my ass, not knowing if my own department's going to get there, and you got to wait 10 minutes to see if a truck gets out.
Well, this is also good for career fire departments who do recalls of off-duty career personnel. You know immediately who's responding in. And specialty teams. For example, our department's primarily career. We have a very strong 15-member volunteer company with our organization. And we're actually, you're going to set it up for us.
Set up,
we're going to give it a shot.
Just went on.
And see how it works out. But we also have a dive team, we have a SWAT medic program, and we have the same problem, who's going to show up? So we're considering this for our organization as well. Tell me technically how it works. First of all, let's talk about the price. This is dirt cheap.
If you sign up for 1 year, at the most, it's $800 a year. If you signed up for 5 years, it's $650 a year. Out of the brotherhood, we want to make sure we're addressing the problem. We get everybody on the system who can get on. So for a department to drop $650 a year, it's cheaper than their internet connection.
That's pretty amazing.
And we had people tell us prices all over the board. We said we want to make sure everybody affords it, but that we can cover the cost of covering the system.
How's it work?
It's amazing. All you're doing is you're dialing a toll-free number. A woman's going to pick up.
You don't even dial it. You pre-program it into any phone.
Exactly. You pre-program it. 3 seconds later, a voice comes on, says, enter 1 through 9. You press number 1 if you're going to station 1, 2 if you're going to station 2, whatever you want the message to say when you hit
so
that number.
So you can
number.
Set that up at your department.
Totally customized.
So I can have buttons 1 and 2. 1 to the scene, 2 to the station.
Exactly.
Period.
Exactly. And your department says, you know, some number is dive response, another is SWAT response, whatever it is. So 9 to the scene. It transfers over to an internet connection, and that's the best part about it. As many people can be on the system viewing it at one time. So in our station, we have two stations. Right above my turnout gear is a 22-inch monitor, and I look up and I see immediately, because all it is an internet connection. The only requirement to this system is that you have an internet connection and use Internet Explorer. That's it.
At the firehouse or dispatch center or wherever.
Exactly. You can view it on your phone. The chiefs can view this on their phone, mobile web. They can view it on the internet, on a laptop. You can have three.
So BlackBerry, you could. The
BlackBerry,
chief his car, he can look right away and see who's responding.
And he'll get a list of every single person. You know, and it's great knowing whether you should be waiting for the other person or not, but I'll tell you what, and after reading some of your articles this morning about should we have gotten people there faster, this is about response time. If you know in 30 seconds you're not going to get out to that call, do not make your public wait. Get on with dispatch, say, retone me, give me another 30 seconds, but now in the first minute, we know whether we're going to get out or not. If you're not going to get out, flip the call. Flip the call.
Firefighter safety and survival, clearly one of the key components is having enough firefighters. And I mean, you can go to almost any class, Mike's, Rich's, Dennis's, any of them, and they're going to tell you, you're not going to go, you know, with five people to a dwelling fire and do any kind of job. You need people for the task. It starts at the hydrant, goes to the pump panel, force entry, search, rescue, stretch lines. It takes three people to put on an inch and three-quarter. You got to ventilate. You need some commanders. It takes people. A small dwelling fire, my number is 21 people. I'm not even interested in you're going to have 21 people coming in. And that's without anything showing, just to set up the process of what tasks we're going to assign people.
And now your dispatcher... let me say, it's free. As soon as any department signs up, the county gets this for free. We want the county to be able to see, or your dispatch, whoever that is, to be able to see that you're going to get out. So now if the dispatcher looks and says, okay, I got four from your department on a first alarm, I got four from another, they're able to say we got enough or we don't have enough, so we can get to those numbers, whatever those are. You're going to know from the moment people leave their house or work whether you're going to have enough people to make that scene.
Outstanding. Well, the website is www.iamresponding.com. You can check it out, and all the contact information you need is there. Brad Pinsky, thanks a lot. We appreciate you being here from Emergency Responder Reply.
Thank you. We're down at 9:33 if people want to come see us, booth
9:33. This show will be posted next week. What you just said,
we are not going to be there.
Thank you for being here. Absolutely a neat product. And like I say, you can walk the floor, and there's all kinds of cool products down there. But when it comes to firefighter safety, and if you've read any of my stuff over the years, none of it matters if you don't have the staffing. You got to have people to do the job. And Brad's little invention here at IamResponding.com really does help solve a problem, and that's why I want to bring it to our audience. Well, we've got three outstanding guests and very well-dressed guests, I might add, other than your host, Dr. Dennis O'Neill. Dennis and I, I'm going to tell tales out of school here, have been friends probably close to 30 years now. I'll talk, you listen.
All right.
Then I'll point to you when you're allowed to respond.
Oh, good. Okay.
And you can't go bullshit during the either. Dennis and I actually met years ago when, honestly, some of you younger folks may not be aware, but the biggest fire show in the nation back in the 60s and 70s was the New York State Fire Chiefs Conference up at the Concord Hotel. It was massive. It was the show. And that was the one you wanted to go to. And then others, of course, FDIC took off after that. Now it's a whole different makeup. And then many of them are private shows now, privately funded shows. And walking the aisles like I still do today, 35 years later, and I saw some study books being sold, study for exams and things like that. And I talked to this young boy talking to young man back then. And Dennis, the name of your little business was Fire EdCon Press.
Yep.
Do I remember that right? Yeah. And Dennis sold books on the floor to supplement his income to help support firefighters. And at that point, you were a lieutenant or captain in Jersey City?
Lieutenant.
Okay. So Dr. Dennis O'Neill now, a lot of time has passed. We're still good friends. And Dennis, tell us a little bit about yourself. Currently, you're at the peak of your career. It may be the most fun part of your career, but you're definitely at the peak of your career. But you had a long and a very successful career, leaving as acting chief of department of Jersey City, New Jersey. So welcome, Dennis. Tell us a little about yourself, Dennis.
Well, Billy, first I want to take the opportunity. I don't know if any of the audience knows this, but Billy was just awarded the Everett Hudeberg Award by the International Fire Service Training Association.
That's not fair.
That's the top educational award in the country, and we're all very proud of you, Billy.
Thank you very much.
Making a difference.
Look, I'm working the applause light.
The other thing, Billy, is as you point out, we go back probably 30 or 35 years, and I'm sitting here listening about Brad's product, and I know that both you and I were truckies in our day, and I think if we had a button where we had to hit one or two.
I was only a truckie when I had a head injury. Then I got smart. I went to rescue.
We won't be able to figure that one and two thing out. Yeah.
That's right. We're going to have blue, red.
Okay, good. Okay. Yeah, just we got to simplify this stuff. Billy, I was very fortunate. Came up through the ranks, spent all of my time in the street, but I didn't have a lot of talents other than with a number two pencil, so I spent a lot of time going to school and did my undergrad and master's degree work in New Jersey and then finished up my doc work at New York University down in God's Little Circus, Greenwich Village, and you know that section
Beautiful.
Of the city.
Sure.
And so I was the fire chief in Jersey City and teaching in the grad school of education at New York University for about 5 years. And got this opportunity to come to Emmitsburg. And it's
You're
been,
there 10, 12,
12 years.
Years. Yeah,
12
right,
years.
Right.
And so it's been a fun ride. I get to meet men and women from all over the country. Pretty neat.
We're going to talk in a few minutes about the National Fire Academy and about the programs and what's working, what's not, and to get some insight from you. It's good to see a firefighter and a fire chief up there in charge. Interesting that you are the first civil service protected, non-appointed superintendent of the fire academy. And that was really by the efforts of the fire service, because we got fed up every time an administration changed or somebody pissed somebody off, we had a new superintendent. So very good. Our next guest is Battalion Chief Rich Blattis. Rich is chief of the 1-5 Battalion in the Bronx. Let's welcome Rich to the show. And by the way, Dennis, you have a doctorate in?
Education.
Okay, and Chief Blattis, Richie, you have a bachelor's in?
Fire administration.
Fire administration. You're working on your master's toward?
Master's in Homeland Security.
Okay, very good. Tell us about yourself.
Why are you picking on truck companies?
Well, if I ask you any tough questions, we'll understand. I'm going to speak very slow, and I'm using crayon.
Smith, do you hear this, Smith?
Stand up when you say that.
Chief Smith's going to go, oh. Good, Richie.
I've spent 27 years in the fire service with the FDNY. I was appointed to 48 Engine, where John Salka was the captain later on in life, in our career.
A lot of wonderful people came out of 48 Engine.
A lot of wonderful people came out of 48 Engine. Very fortunate to have spent some time there. My lieutenant was in Manhattan on the Upper West Side to get some high-rise experience, and when I made captain, went back to the Bronx, where I was fortunate enough to remain as a battalion chief. Probably about 10 years ago, John Salka, who was a good friend of mine, had asked me if I wanted to assist him in a hands-on training class. And that's how my actually service in as an instructor began. Since then, I've evolved into my own classes and my own lectures with my good buddy Tom Richardson. And we really enjoy getting the word out there and keeping firefighters safe and helping them understand the basics of what we do and keeping themselves and their company safe.
Well, I know Tommy, outstanding instructor. Absolutely. If anybody ever has a chance to attend the Blattis and Richardson School of Firefighting, you've got a great opportunity. Well, it's good to have you here, Rich. And our next guest, and our last, and certainly not least, is probably one of the most colorful figures in the fire service. Never shy for an opinion, but that's good. We need more chiefs in our business to speak up. And that's a problem. It seems the higher you go, the more nervous you get about speaking up on things. And certainly my next guest, retired Deputy Chief Mike Smith, Washington, D.C. Fire Department, never has trouble speaking up. Welcome, Mike. Please.
Thank you.
Mike, you got some. First, I want to mention that, Mike, you have two master's degrees. What are they in, Mike?
Public and Fire Administration.
Okay. And Mike also has just published a book, Building Construction Methods and Materials for the Fire Service, put out by Brady. And if you are a firefighter, you must have Frank Brannigan's book, and you must have Chief Smith's new book, which is the perfect addition to follow up on Frank's book. I guess the best way I can describe Mike, Chief Brannigan, who we love and miss terribly, and you talk about colorful figures in our business, his book was not a sit-back-and-read book. To me, it was a research book. I would look things up in it. To sit back and read Frank's book would be a difficult challenge. Mike's book I see differently. While it's definitely a research, off-the-shelf, pull it and look for stuff, you can read Mike's book. If you have limited experience in building construction and you're a firefighter, this is the book to read because you can read it. Frank's book was like reading the encyclopedia. Mike's book is like reading a textbook, only a very interesting textbook that will teach you about the issues of building construction and why you need to know this stuff as a firefighter. Mike, tell us about your book a little bit.
In essence, and I had taken Frank's course in 1974, so I was sort of on the beginnings of his career as an author and an instructor. And Frank brought a lot to the table. What I looked at was I also spent 25 years in the construction industry because firemen can't work one job. As I looked at things, and I'm being the only bona fide truck guy up here.
Because note the seizure-like activity.
You know, I've mentioned to people many times, I'm a truckman by birth and a chief by paycheck. But, in essence, as I watched it go over the years, I really looked at people not understanding building construction. And I thought to myself, well, how can you operate on a fireground if you don't understand how building went together, then how the hell could you predict how buildings are going to fall apart? So what business do you have, you know, doing that? So as I look at the book, and of course, you know, as many of you guys know, when you write a book, it doesn't belong to you after a certain point in time. So I had to make decisions and say, well, where does this book go and what audience? And I wanted a book that was simple enough that anybody could read it and understand it, but you could carry it with you and point to things and say, well, this is what it is. But I also added some parts in there as a part called School of Hard Knocks. And in essence, what it really is how I screwed up as a fire officer and then also construction. And then lastly, there's a NIOSH after action reports. And I actually got the most flack about that because somebody said, well, why do you got this included if I can get it for free? And what I said was, as I go around the country teaching and speaking, I kept asking people, who reads NIOSH after action reports? And no hands went up. I said, what happens is you read the text, and all of a sudden at the end of the book, you see exactly how firemen were killed as a direct result of the building failure. And I thought that was important. So in essence, hopefully the book, actually 10% of the book goes back to National Fallen Firefighters, because I think that that association, our foundation, actually does a great thing in bringing the people. So I wanted to give back that, and I contacted Ron Sarnicky and said, look, you know, I want to do something good. And so they get 10% of the profits from the book.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Well, welcome, Mike. You know, I want to talk a little bit about education and training, and I'm going to go to Rich Blattis, Chief Blattis. You're in an interesting program right now. You're at the Naval Graduate School, Naval Postgraduate
Naval
School.
Naval Postgraduate School. Yes.
And which is a.k.a. a Homeland Security program you're going
to? It's
through?
A Homeland Security program through DHS.
Tell us about that. How did you get involved? Did the job send you? Did you sign up? And where is it? What requirements
The job published the opportunity about 3 years ago. The program began. It started out with Assistant Chief Mike Weinlein attending and one other captain. It's a very rigorous application process with essays and recommendations, etc. When you get into the program, it's an 18-month program with 6 2-week in-residence sessions in Monterey, California.
Wow.
With very intense classes.
So six, you're going 6 times for 2 weeks each.
Correct.
Out to California. But not a lot of California time.
Not a lot of California time. Not a lot of downtime in California.
Wow.
When you get back, you're responsible for approximately 20 to 30 hours a week of work on your graduate degree. And the program is really structured to get fire service and other leaders around the country to devise strategies for their department in the Homeland Security area.
Okay, very good. Well, that's, now, when will you graduate? When will you
I will
be
graduate in September 08.
Looking forward to it?
If I make it that far. September 08.
Fire officer training is kind of the focus of today's program. And we'll be back in just a minute. We're going to talk about some theories I have about the National Fire Academy. And I'm a graduate of the EFO program and other classes there. And I love the National Fire Academy. And when they appointed Dr. O'Neill as the boss, I love it even more because we have a firefighter there running the show. But I want to talk about it from a local standpoint. What do they do in New York City to train fire officers? How do you go from firefighter to fire officer? Jersey City, Washington, D.C., and then we'll talk about what the National Fire Academy has to offer. We'll be right back. You're listening to Radio at Firehouse.com. This is Through the Smoke. We're live at Firehouse Expo in Baltimore.
We are here with a group of firefighters, police officers, EMTs, paramedics, nurses, and their families to talk about firstresponders.com, the website devoted to the financial life of first responders. Excuse me, what's your name? Okay, Jim, tell me, what do you like best about firstresponders.com? Is it the credit card that tells everybody you're a first responder or their competitive mortgage rates? Oh, it's the Responder Rewards Program. Exclusive discounts you and your family get from hundreds of retail outlets, from home improvement to electronics to clothing. Up to 40% off. Great. Is this your little doggy? Hey, buddy. Everybody seems to love the benefits of firstresponders.com. Right, everybody?
You speak your own language, we speak it too. That's because firstresponders.com was created by first responders. With benefits like great mortgage products, discounts at retailers, and the first responders credit card, it's not just a credit card, it's a badge. Firstresponders.com, giving back to the people who give.
We're back. This is Radio at Firehouse.com. The show's Through the Smoke. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. We're live at Firehouse Expo in Baltimore. Welcome back, everybody. Okay, we're talking this week with Dr. Dennis O'Neill, Battalion Chief Richie Blattis, and retired Deputy Fire Chief Mike Smith from Washington, D.C. Fire officer training. I got to tell you, and really, one of the legends and certainly a controversial figure in our business, who I learned from many years ago in a class, was Carl Holmes. Carl, who's been very sick lately, and we keep him in our prayers. Carl had a very bad stroke.
Oh.
Doing better. He had a bout with cancer a year or two ago. He's doing better with that. So we'll keep Carl in our prayers. And Carl was one who never was shy, and Carl certainly stayed in the spotlight on some controversial issues over his career. But Carl, to me, was one of the best instructors I had in understanding the role of the company officer. And Carl used a term, the company officer is where the rubber meets the road. Nothing will happen without a good company officer. And I carried that onto my own theory that you can have a wonderful fire chief, a wonderful chief of department, great policies, procedures, ideas, all sorts of stuff. But if that captain and lieutenant does not want that to happen, whatever that is, it will not happen. You know how our business works. It ain't going to happen. It's going to be fought. It's going to be altered. It's going to be ignored. On the other hand, if you have a horrendous chief of department and a terrible fire administration, but you have a good company officer, a good captain or a good company lieutenant, that lieutenant is able to still move that company forward, in many cases in spite of the organization, to ensure the safety and survival of their personnel. You don't need the chief of department's permission to do training at Engine 47 at Tuesday at 7 p.m. You want to do it, we're going to do it. And that's where that company officer gets things done. That's how it happens. And, you can go in your own department, sir, visit some of the bigger cities. And some of the companies are sleeping at 7 p.m. And some of the companies are wide awake, rappelling down walls, working saws, doing training. And that's the lieutenant or that's the captain. And in some cases, a battalion chief or a district chief motivating them. But I really believe in that initial theory that it's the company officer that makes or breaks our organization. With that said, let's hear from our guests about what's the company officer training program, assuming you're promoted up. And actually, even beforehand, maybe in some of your cities, you've got to do some training and have some qualifications before you can test to become a company officer. But I want to talk about it from New York, Jersey City, and D.C., and then we'll talk about it nationally. And then I'll share some thoughts and my opinions on the National Fire Academy. So, Mike, let's talk with you first. Washington, D.C. Fire Department, in your day, and maybe you had some challenges on that. Your face is indicating you did and some frustrations. You're glowing. So that's good. That's why I asked you to be here, because I know you don't hold back, Mike.
I knew I would be first. We really didn't have a process. We had a study process, and then you passed through an exam process, and you got promoted. The culture, though, was real difficult. Because in a full-time professional department, everything's about money. If you make any requirements on anybody at all, you're going to have to compensate them, and that becomes a big issue. So rather than fight that, and I'm not sure what they've done now because I've been gone for 3 years, but up until the moment I left, we really never had a formalized training process. It really did break down, and I say break down, to what you said. It was individualism. We have four shifts. And one firehouse could be as different as night and day between the four shifts. And I don't think that's a good thing. I think it's a bad thing. But what I had, I finished up as training director before I left, and what I thought was that it needs to be an initiative that it combines in-firehouse time as well as taking advantage of technology available today. I did have the opportunity to finish the EFO program at Dennis's Fire Academy. And I thought that the combination of interacting with other people from around the country was really what really helped.
That's a big
more than
deal.
Else. Yeah. But I also was tasked, when I went back home, to look at an issue, research the issue, develop something to fix the issue. So I think that the fire officer today has a much more challenging task than I ever had when I was a company officer. You don't do things by the seat of your pants anymore. Whether it's HR issues or strategy and tactics on the fire ground, the days of the natural-born officer, I think, are gone.
Or the days of hiding,
yeah,
the non-good officers,
yeah, yeah,
are gone.
Yeah. And I think, unfortunately, you got to start somewhere to make change. You could look at the top or you could look at the bottom, but I think there needs to be revampment all the way up and down the line. But it can't be just sitting down in the classroom. I think program that Richie's involved in is absolutely the way to go, where you, and Dennis's Fire Academy, where you go there for a period of time, you interact with your peer group, you get and solicit information from other people, and then you go back home and you take it and you use it. So, unfortunately, I don't know if they do it now. They didn't do it during my time, and really what caused me to become a student of the game. I grew up in Washington, D.C., so I always felt I had to do something different. And like I said, I became a student of the game.
Excellent, Mike. Chief Blattis, Richie, what do you think? How's it work in New York City first? And then what I'm going to ask you guys next is, what is a good company officer? So we'll get back to that in a second. But Chief Blattis, what's New York City doing to train their lieutenants and captains?
Well, unfortunately, we're a slave to the civil service system. So it's good in one aspect where the candidate needs to study and needs to prepare for the examination, but it fails in another aspect where it doesn't judge the person's individual, let's say, dedication or aggressiveness on what it takes to become a good officer. We're just testing book
knowledge. So if you can take a test.
If you take a test, you're in.
You're in.
And we're all a product of that environment. And I'm not saying that's a totally bad thing, but that should be one aspect of the promotion process. I don't think it should be the full promotion process.
Didn't you, years ago, pretty much after the test, you went to a company? That's a lot more advanced now, right? Once you do qualify, isn't there a lieutenant's academy?
Once you get selected for promotion, you go to first-line supervisor for the lieutenant's rank for 30 days, which is a thumbnail amount of time when you think about it.
What are they teaching in that?
Some leadership, some administrative skills, give them some educational skills where they can conduct a drill, et cetera. When they make captain, they go back for a captain's command course, which is 5 weeks. And when you're selected for battalion chief now, I believe it's up to 7 or 8 weeks now, okay, you go to a chief's command course, and we review and expand on the requirements, what you need to know.
You know, for the audience's sake, and I'm sure all of you know this, there are some very large cities in this country, Detroit included, that there is no process. The senior man is chief, the next senior person is deputy chief, and you promote based upon people retiring, passing away, and you move up. It's an interesting way of doing it.
Interesting is one way.
Interesting is the word, for sure. Yeah. That's right. It does bring experience, which some guys I've talked to in Detroit, they certainly tout that, but there's obviously a lot to talk about on that as well. So anything else to add as far as...
Well, I was just saying, as far as training goes and leadership of a company, the captain is where it's at. The captain sets the tone for his company. He lays out the standards that his lieutenants will follow. So I believe that's an extremely important rank. And a unique individual has to hold that position. A captain can make or break a company.
And in New York City, you have four shifts. There's a captain and three lieutenants who share those four shifts. But the captain on duty or off duty is responsible for that company.
It's his company. He's responsible.
Okay, very good. Very good. And Dennis, what do they do in Jersey City? And if you know what they're doing now, please share it.
Jersey City is very similar to Washington, D.C. and New York City in that we have a civil service system that is pretty much based on book knowledge, your ability to take an examination and do well on a test. Those marks are scheduled out or marked out to the 10,000th of a point. It includes your seniority as well. So if you have 98.996 and somebody else has 98.997 on a test, they get promoted and you don't. But I want to make a point that Chief Smith and Chief Blattis have talked about, and that is that we tend to look at our promotion process as somehow not perfect. And we always look at ourselves and criticize ourselves in the fire service. But let me assure you, IBM or Raytheon or anybody else's, the Army's system for promotion is just as imperfect. To pick people for promotion, to pick people for positions of responsibility, in some cases you get a lot of training like the military. In some cases you can walk in and be the president of IBM and not know what a computer is. So I don't want us to beat ourselves up about our systems of promotion. We have as good a system, I think. I get to meet men and women from all over the country. And I go to places. I just came back from Rapid City, South Dakota. And we've got wonderful people in the fire service. And we've got our faults, we've got our foibles, but we always pick on ourselves. And I just ask everybody to understand that we do a pretty good job. I think that if you look at any organization, if you look at any business, our business's number is 911. It's real simple. You call us, all we ask you to do is tell us where you are and what your problem is, and we keep sending red trucks until your problem's solved. So I'm pretty proud of...
We definitely bring a lot. And we are quick to remind those outside our business of that, but within our own families...
Yeah, we pick on each other. Yeah, this is
off.
Wrong and that's wrong.
That's right. What is a good company officer is my next question. To me, I could almost answer it by showing you some pictures of people I worked with years ago and tell you stories about these people. But let's hear what our panelists say. And any audience members, as I reminded you, you're welcome to come up and ask questions. But Dennis, a good company officer, and maybe you're like me. You remember this one lieutenant or captain, or maybe it was you.
Well, no. Actually, I think if you look at the Supreme Court, they said their definition of pornography was, I don't know what it is, but I know it when I see it.
That's right.
And I think we look at company officers the same way. We have in our own mind what a company officer is. The problem is, of course, is that everybody's image of what a good one is different, okay? But if I were to say, what is it, what are the building blocks of a good company officer, there's a couple of things. First of all, you need to continually try to learn new things. You can't become stagnant. The world is changing, and you've got to set the tone for the men and women in your company to be someone who's interested in learning, whether that's self-learning or going to school or taking courses or coming to Firehouse. The second thing is that you need to be concerned with people or concerned about your people. And that's for good and for bad. If you have a firefighter that doesn't have the skills, you've got to do whatever it takes to get that person the skills, whether you're going to be the good guy or the bad guy, whether you're going to be goofus or gallant, it doesn't matter. You've got to take an interest in those people. The third is that you need to be keeping one eye on where the department is going. And sometimes you need to be the bearer of bad news, and you've got to send bad news up the chain and say, this is wrong or that's wrong. And this is good and that's good. And fourth, I don't know how you say this because it's not really a science, it's probably an art, but you need to be the kind of officer that you want to have as your own officer. If you want to be a good lieutenant, or if you want to work for a good captain, or you want to work for a good battalion chief like Rich here, you need to be a good lieutenant. Okay? You have to walk the walk, and you have to talk the talk. You can't want to work for a great officer, but at the same time be a jerk. I don't know how you say that.
No, it's simple. I mean, it's as simple as you people, I better not catch you without your bunker gear on, and you're running inside the building with a ball cap on.
Thank you.
You know, screaming that the building's going to come down and
Thank
stuff.
You.
Sure. Simple stuff like that. Cool. Mm-hmm. Richie, what is a good company officer?
Dennis took the words right out of my mouth. To me, a good company officer, I remember Jimmy Sheeran when I was in 48 Engine. That is the person I wanted to aspire to. You know, he was an effective leader. He came up with safe, innovative, and effective training techniques. He taught us how to do our craft. He taught us how it was going to be and what it took to become a good firefighter. And he also taught us that we had to support the job. No matter what the policies or procedures were, whether we agreed with them or didn't agree with them, this was the job. We were going to do it. We were going to make them better. And we were going to keep ourselves safe.
That's kind of part of that greatest generation attitude, I think, that we read about. Good. Very good. Mike, Chief Smith, what is a good company officer, in your opinion?
I think it's got many roles. I think, first and foremost, you got to be a mentor. You got to be, I think from the time a person first comes on the job, they have to be shown or given an opportunity that... I'm going to show you things, and I'm going to show you things, and I'm going to do the things I show you. I'm going to teach you what you need to know, and I'm going to teach you some things maybe you don't want to do. So you're in a role of mentor, coach. I think fundamentally you have to be straight. You can't show favoritism ever. I think you have to convince and give the confidence and teach the teamwork that if I tell you to stop, for example, you're not going to internalize, you're not going to actualize, you're going to stop. Because if you're getting ready to hit 440 volts, I need to have that relationship. Now, whether you like me or not, I don't think that becomes part of the equation. No matter where I went with the food chain, I actually am an amalgamation of all the officers I ever worked for that I took a little bit from each guy, and I stole it, and there's a snippet of different guys inside me. and I dismissed the ones I didn't like. I didn't respect, I guess. I didn't do what they did. You know, for example, if a guy was the most popular guy in the firehouse as an officer, but he was a total schmuck as far as being fair and straight, I dismissed him.
Right.
In my situation, I wouldn't tell people to go to school if I wasn't going to school. I wouldn't tell people to wear your turnout gear if, in fact, I didn't wear my turnout gear. So I think you're a role model, mentor, coach, as well as the commander.
I made some thoughts of my own here. A learner and teacher, a policy enforcer, which ties into what you said. I mean, look, there's policies and procedures. You're a law enforcement officer. If you think the headquarters policies suck, you still got to enforce them and then do what you can to try and change them through the process. Consistency. Whoa, consistency. If we could just fix that. And I've been guilty of it, and I've also enforced it. I mean, it's a tough thing to do when you got five firefighters working for you. One's a clown, and the rest of them are great. You still got to treat them equal and fair. Not get too close to your people, but not be too far from your people. It's very easy for lieutenants and captains in the firehouse. I want to be one of the gang. I want to be close to these people. But yet you've got to enforce these policies with these people now. So you got to have that distance. It's the toughest job in the fire service is the first line company officer. And no nonsense response to safety issues. This is not a democracy. We're not voting on your bunker gear. We're not voting on your mask. We're not voting on you stopping at the red light. This is what you're going to do. I'm the dictator. Shut up. Just do it. And it's got to be that mix of all.
There's a statement they use in the first line supervisors program for the lieutenants that get promoted. They spend their time there, and in the last day of the class at the end, they come out with this big billboard. And on the billboard it says, never forget where you came from, but remember you're not there anymore.
That's great.
You know,
yeah.
Because you need to take that next step and do all the things that you're outlining.
Remember the stuff and apply it. As Mike said, pick the good. And you know, whenever I've promoted people in the past, I'll tell them, I said, who was the worst company officer you ever worked for? And they'd say, who it is. I said, well, don't do that. Just don't do that stuff. It really upsets you. Well, then don't do it to these people. All right, so solutions now to becoming a good or getting good or having good company officers. And I wrote down conferences, online programs, read the magazines, local community colleges, advanced education, like you've certainly set the example, and the National Fire Academy. And that's where we're going to go with this discussion. All right, teasingly, but not really... have suggested to Dennis in the past that he needs to shut down every program that is being taught at the National Fire Academy except for two. And I hope your folks are listening because they're having strokes right now. But then he said, I'll never listen to Goldfighter. Yeah. So, as I said, I suggest that he shut down every program at the National Fire Academy except for two. We need a super high-level, high-education company officer training program. I envision it a half a year straight. And I don't know if it's going to be there because it might have to be an outreach program where you do it at local community colleges. But something where the chief can send, you know, firefighter Isley just got promoted. He's now lieutenant. He's going away for 6 months. Or maybe he goes for a month before he's even promoted to see if he has the capability as the last part of the process. Okay, we're promoting you now. You're going to go back and get the rest of this. You're going to learn about or how to get over your fear of getting in your buddy's face, enforcing the policies. Firefighter Jones says, this sucks, we're not doing it. That type of stuff. As well as the tactical considerations that company officers who are first due incident commanders have. So I just one day, I was in the car. And didn't you guys have a survey done and they called a bunch of us around the country to give input on what should be done to the National Fire Academy? Somebody did some kind of survey a year or two ago.
Or
maybe,
anything,
well, they may not have told you.
Yeah, they probably didn't tell me, yeah.
Okay, but when GW called, he said, this is how I want you to answer.
Yeah.
So, but I was just thinking, all the other stuff is nice, but what are we always talking about? We're talking about how firefighters get killed, we're talking about personnel issues, all that kind of stuff. Well, if we had a program that would deliver, and not everyone can be a good company officer, so keep that in mind, but would deliver this credentialed, trained company officer, I think a lot of the issues we're running into may go away from a tactical training standpoint, from a personnel, all the stuff that makes the headlines at firehouse.com that we read about. I really feel that way. Part two, take the EFO program, and I'm very proud to be an alumni of that. I got mine. Most people graduate in 4 years. I was in the 5-year program. It was a small school bus and all that stuff. But the EFO program, I learned so much. And I got there, I arrived thinking I knew everything already. But we got to get people out of the fire station, leave your town. With due respect, when you see what happened in Charleston, I'm not being critical of the incident, but I'm bringing up a point that we heard. The officers hardly ever left that city. The chief said, I'd never leave this town. You got to go, as Chief Smith said, as Mike said, half the issue of going to the National Fire Academy is talking to other people. You people here this week, you're going to talk to other people from other departments. Oh, that's how you do it in East Bourgeois or wherever you come from. That's a big deal, and that happens when you leave your fire department. It's very refreshing. So the first was to create a super company officer program, and the second would be to take EFO and turn it into a super how to be a good chief program. And we'd have to define what a good company officer is and a good chief. But that's my idea, so I'll turn it over to Dennis. First, tell us what's available now at the National Fire Academy, specific to the fire company officer, and tell me what you think about my idea, and it could be two initials.
Okay. No, I wouldn't be two initials. Billy, you kind of remind me of the Cowardly Lion in the movie The Wizard of Oz, and he said, if I were the king of the forest.
That's
right. That's what we do. The good news is, there's a lot of good news, that the company officer training is not a single package at the National Fire Academy, but a number of different courses and skill sets that the company officer and the chief officer needs to do a good job. And, of course, the issue is that everybody can't come to the National Fire Academy. We train about 80,000 people a year, so about 8,000 on our campus in Emmitsburg. But of those 8,000, you know, you have 1.2 million firefighters in the country. So what we do is we do have different courses for different people, depending upon the skills that they need or their chief says that they feel that they need. We also work with the 50 state training systems around the country, and we give them a lot of courses. We've given them, for example, a chief officer's course. It's 160 hours of curriculum, audiovisual materials, textbooks, student manuals, everything, videos, whatever they need to teach that course, so that's also available. And the third thing that we've done is we're working a professional development model, and this is going to take a few seconds for me to describe, but if you look at a profession, any profession in the world, Brad, our attorney friend, a physician, you were working with the physician from Harvard just before this meeting, every profession has two parts. One part is training. Training is about technique. Training is about history and the perfection of technique. And education. Education is about the future. It's about dealing with the future, about negotiating the environment. The head of NYU Medical School, the head of the Mayo Clinic, the head of the best hospital, Johns Hopkins, here in Baltimore, at one time in his or her career, sat in a room by themselves with a syringe and an orange practicing. That's training, okay? Education is about learning about the body and how it works and things like that. So the National Fire Academy has developed a profession in cooperation with the state training systems, the International Association of Fire Chiefs, and 120 colleges and universities around the country. We have developed a professional development model for the fire service that includes training, that includes education. It developed designed all of the courses, the syllabi for those courses, and we are working to get those into the state training systems and the colleges and universities around the country. Now, I'm going to be looking at the wrong side of a lawn. I hope you're not, Billy, but by the time we get this thing fully implemented. But my vision for that is that we will have a professional status in the fire service that the medicine, the folks in the medical professions, law, engineering, teaching enjoy. That there will be an element of training and an element of education, and that the fire service professional, the fire chief, the fire lieutenant, the fire captain, will enjoy the same professional status that physicians and attorneys and engineers do today.
That's a great vision. That's a great vision. So what do you think about my idea?
Well, I just explained to you. You weren't listening, Bill.
No. This is the truckie.
It's already out there. Let me try this.
Versus the engine company guy.
Okay, the engine company guys.
So you're saying I got to take a bunch of courses to get this done?
You will. You want to be a pro? You got to do the time. You got to do the work.
So why can't I just go somewhere for 18 weeks and learn all this?
So it's a place going to take to go? More than 18 weeks.
So it's not that simple.
It's a lifelong.
It's not that simple.
It's not easy being a teacher. It's not easy being an engineer. And it's not easy being a fire officer.
And that's the issue. And that brings it right where it needs to be. And that's the point is it's a continuous process.
Exactly.
I can send you to a officer's program training school to get you started. But if you're not willing to continue attending the programs, attending professional conferences, it ain't going to happen.
You're not a professional.
So to the fire chief, the fire captain, the lieutenant, even the firefighter who doesn't leave home, who doesn't participate in online training programs, who doesn't attend courses, you stopped when you attended your last course.
Billy, let me put it in a way that everybody understands, and that is if you went, heaven forbid, and I hope it never happens, but if you have a brain tumor someday and the physician comes in and says, I'm a physician and I learned brain surgery on my own and in my own little neighborhood over here in East Baltimore, and don't worry about it. We're going to make sure you're taken care of.
Right.
What would you say?
You ain't touching me.
Yeah. And I think we have to look at the fire service as a profession. And if we do that, then the other things will fall in line.
With every and Mike, I see you're going in just a second. But we're so busy these days, Dennis. Who has time? In my department, and I think this is one of the greatest things we do in my department, the chief tells you once a year, and we sign you up. We tell you what class you're taking at the fire academy.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've got some who love doing it. We've got some we're forcing into it. But we're going to make you continue your education. How do I do that for the guy in Iowa or the guy in New Mexico who's a volunteer fire officer who really has limited opportunities? What do you offer there?
We actually, this is not a plug. I didn't even know he
was going to
ask that question.
You just passed me the card under the table.
No.
What are you talking about?
3 weeks ago, believe it or not, we started our new online learning system. We have about 8 courses, 9 courses up online. You can take the tests, do the work. It's a lot of graphics work, individual stuff you can do. Not a plug, but Mike's book is terrific on methods and materials of construction. You take a course that Richie and his pal are doing. I mean, those are the kinds of things that are professional development, but we're formalizing it. From the National Fire Academy standpoint of view, we're delivering those courses down to the local levels. You have online courses if you're in Ottumwa, Iowa, and you can't get to a state training system, but there are more and more opportunities, and it's more, it becomes an excuse if you don't do
That's
it.
Just what I was going to say. If you're not getting it, you don't want it.
You don't.
It's that simple. And that's what I was hoping would come out of this.
Yeah.
And I sort of hinted with the
you're
conferences online, magazines. You got to continue. The brain's got to continue if you're going to continue your job. Mike, you were comments.
Yeah,
go ahead,
because,
please. And then we've got a member of the audience we'll talk to after this. Go ahead.
There's not one answer to this problem. I think as you evolve through your career, it's a combination of education blended with experience and also then added to acceptance of what your experience has taught you about the education. I could put somebody for 18 weeks or 32 weeks or 3 years. It doesn't really matter. And I fill their head with pictures and drawings and guest speakers. Well, I've given them stuff. Which, here again, how do I measure what they learn? Well, they take tests. Well, you're going to start gravitating to take tests. But suppose a class I taught today, we're talking about flashover. And what I said to them was, rollover was a 99.99% valid clue or cue that flashover is imminent. Well, I've just educated them. And I've also reinforced the next time they're on a fire ground, they see a tongue of fire that either lazily goes across the ceiling or goes out of a window and comes back in again. They know now. Ah, he told me that. I see it. I now reinforced it. So I think it's a combination of a process. Dennis is right. It's an evolving process. It's not a one-time shot. But I think it has to be coupled with a national credentialing program whereby a guy from Iowa can go to Florida and all the things they've learned and all the courses that they've taken go with them.
Isn't that crazy now?
Well,
it's crazy.
Actually, it's becoming criminal because what you have, and I use the example of a driver's license. Everybody in this room has a driver's license, I would assume, And you got it in a certain process, not necessarily the same as I got my process. But I can use my Maryland driver's license, which originated as a Pennsylvania driver's license, and rent a car in New York, sure, or Ohio or California. But I didn't necessarily get the driver's license in exactly the same way. But there's an agreement, an acceptance, allows me to drive in those states and rent cars in those states, whatever. But there's a resistance, and I really, for the life of me, for all those of you who are listening, okay, to me, that's the simple process. As long as, and this is what actually came out of National Fire Academy, as long as a third-party entity looks at your training program and says it fits within the framework of the nationally accepted, recognized credentialing program, then you got it. And I think that should be initiated from the day a person starts this job. I think from the moment that you join the circus all the way to the last day that you strike your own tent and retire, you should be learning. You know, I was a chief, and the bottom line was I didn't hear a voice from up above and a burning bush suddenly appeared and said, you now know everything you need to know. But I was suddenly thrust into a position in which I sought that required me to protect all those who work for me. Well, I didn't get to be a chief the same way Dennis did or the same way Richie did. Actually, they took exams. In D.C., we have no exams for chief. And it's an interesting dichotomy, actually. So I think it has to be an enduring process. One size doesn't fit all.
Self-motivated.
And we shouldn't look to the federal government to solve our problems. There's enough alphabet groups out here that says, you know what? Let's look at the volunteers. Let's look at the IFF. Look at the IFC and all those groups. And to me, there ain't no difference. I don't know where this nonsense started, paid versus volunteer. I do know it's easier to become a professional athlete than it is to become a professional fireman. So my hat's off to the guys who work a full-time job. When they get home, they split their time between family and community service. I'm a kid living a dream. But once again, I'm not telling you something that I didn't do. I am still a student of this game all the way up until this moment in my career. So for me, it's a constantly evolving process. And I think if we keep looking to the federal government to solve our problems, We're don't take offense, Dennis, because I love you, but we're asking a bureaucracy to handle a complex issue. Now, you know, call me Nostradamus, but I can make a prediction that eventually there'll be a committee and eventually there'll be some time spent.
It'll take
but
forever.
But our problem needs to be solved by us, and I think it can be gone through our own alphabet organizations finally deciding that, you know what, there's 50 states, and all 50 states fight fires. They fight structured fires, wildland fires, hazmat, special operations, whatever it might be. But those 50 states, if you leave one state, you should be able to go to another state and carry your credentials with you. And if I show up on your scene, if you're the incident commander, there needs to be a process which says, I belong as an incident commander. I didn't get here because I was the most popular guy.
You can do that.
I didn't get here because I gave more barbecues right before the election. Or I'm married to the fire chief's daughter. There needs to be a system by which we can identify you as having went through a process, have achieved a certain amount of qualifications to be in the position that you're in. And I think, actually, once you do that, people will assimilate into that because there won't be a resistance. It'll be everybody has to do this.
And it's understood.
Yeah,
it's understood. Yeah. We have a member of the audience. If you want to come up to the mic and watch the tape recorder. What's up? Where are you from? Somewhere. Okay,
North
go
Carolina.
Ahead.
But we're a small department, and I guess what you guys have just been talking about the last few minutes.
I'm going to guess you're not from Boston.
No.
Okay, go ahead.
Has answered a lot of questions, but still got a question about education versus experience. And I know you guys have just finished up talking about it, but we come from a small department, and we're fairly young now because we had a lot of retirement at one time. And so we're a fairly young department, so there's a lot of competition now for moving through the ranks, lieutenant, mm-hmm. captain's position. But we don't fight that many fires. You know, we have 100 structure fires a year out of 4,000 runs. But so experience, fire ground experience is lacking, and helping teach safety and survival inexperience on the fire ground is one of the things that leads to a lot of our problems. But with that said, our administration says education, they lean toward education more so than they do experience because, you know, they don't want to hold anybody back from being promoted, which is understandable. But But we have slow houses in our city as well, and it seems that sometimes the people that hold the qualifications to test for promotion may have had one job in their career.
The next fire will be their first.
Yeah.
Sure.
And then, the next, after the process, they could be in charge of a company and with that kind of experience. So I was just wondering, some things, I know high fidelity simulations, those kind of things we could do to increase their experience, but how do you guys feel about, at the experience level versus education? I mean, a lot of our people got education or hold a degree in basket weaving or whatever, but...
Yeah. There's got to be a balance, but go ahead, Chief Blattis. Richie?
That's what I was going to say, Billy.
Thanks for your question.
Education has to supplement the experience, not replace it. You can't replace it. Now, you have an interesting dilemma that probably 90% of the fire service has. We don't have the activity. So how do we do that? Well, we train more. We come to conferences like this. We do hands-on training. We pass it on. We come up with new drills. We come up with new interesting things to do. We make our own fires. We have to do something, but we just can't say, okay, we're not going to do any kind of fire training or any kind of, we're going to take our experience away and now you have a master's degree, so you're king. That's not going to work. I agree with you.
I mean, even have that problem in New York City. You got busy companies and then the majority are not busy companies.
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely. And we also have an education system for promotion that just came about in the last 10 years.
You can't test for certain positions without degrees.
You can't test without a degree. Battalion chief, deputy chief, or two of them. So it's not a unique problem by any means.
Any other comments on that, or we have another question? Mike or Dennis?
I think we keep looking for these singular answers, whether it's experience or education. And we want to try to focus these things down, and it's not that simple.
No.
It's
a buffet.
I can have a firefighter with 1,000 fires under their belt, man or woman, doesn't matter, okay? If they keep making the same mistakes at those 1,000 fires, they're just as bad as the one that hasn't been to a fire yet. We all know people who are educated far beyond their ability. Some days I suspect that I am as well. It's never that simple. A professional, career or volunteer, and understand that you can become a physician and still volunteer to be a doc. You can be a volunteer doc. You can be a volunteer nurse. They're all over the place. You can be a volunteer attorney. I mean, you don't have to be paid to do that. They're out there, believe me. The point is, are you professional? Okay, that's the combination of education and training and continual learning, and it's not in one place.
We have a mic, one more comment.
Oh,
we got a gentleman
microphone
from the audience. Yeah. Welcome.
Well, thanks. My name is Frank Cutton. I'm from Rockland County. We're all volunteer. You guys have all been through the lieutenants, the captains, and we don't have, excuse me, we don't have this where we have to do tests in civil servant. We kind of need our chief officers to start to kind of pick some of the younger members, all right, to start to bring them along. I mean, it's a little different with most volunteers. You have some guys that are really active. Well, you might be real active, but they don't have the smarts to be a leader. But what I would like to do is if you guys can maybe kind of say, look, here's a volunteer company, here's a chief officer. What should he be looking for in his firefighters to promote these, or start to push certain people towards the lieutenant and the captain's positions? Because in a volunteer group, a lot of times your driver is the scene commander. So, I mean, we have all of that, scenario where he can actually be the chief officer at a fire. How do we start to pick?
In an appointed situation.
Not even an appointed situation. The chief usually will help, say, well, look, I like this guy. Let's run him for third lieutenant.
Right.
All right? So what qualities do I start to look for in the firefighters, and these are the younger firefighters, to start to bring them along? Thank you.
Mike? Yeah, good.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
How much courage do you have? I think it really boils down to is what do you want at the end of the process? If I'm looking at a young, motivated individual, I'm looking at somebody who's actually taking their time, and you mentioned volunteer, but I actually say it would be paid also. I would identify them as a fast mover. And are they taking the classes? Are they the first ones to jump into the work details? Are they the first ones that are helping take an SCBA off after the job is over with? Because what you're really witnessing there is leadership skills in practice as opposed to doing. Now, the alternative is they may not be the most popular person. Okay, they may not be the guy who drinks the most with the rest of the fellas. They may also be the guy who overlooks the disciplinary issues that come up. They don't lay out ever. You tell them to wear a mask and they don't wear a mask. You tell them to maintain their gear and they don't. And that's where the courage part comes in. I think it takes courage not to go along to get along. But once I've culturally in my system have identified these people, that this is what the organization wants, is someone who is that leadership, that effort to learn more, that effort to share more, that we've identified that as the organization. It may take you a couple of processes to get that institutionalized, and you may do some damage because, here again, they may vote against you. But I think, and Billy mentioned it early on, I never shied away from that. Dennis has helped me polish my game, believe it or not, to the degree it is now, because I was not a politician in my earlier career.
Geez, thanks, Mike. Yeah. I thought we were truckers.
Yeah. But you see my point. So if you're looking for people, I'm not looking for necessarily the best fireman, meaning the guy who will go down a hallway with their clothes on fire, okay, because you can go to 1,000 room and contents and be the absolute best room and contents fireman that God ever put on the face of the earth. But we're a warehouse fire today.
Yeah, now what are you going to do?
And so I want the guy that is, and it's sort of, I always use the example, the samurai warrior. If you study a samurai warrior, it's the kind of person that actually reads poetry and drinks tea and does the sensitive things. But when they got to go into combat, then it's the real deal. Well, if you look at your guys in your firehouse, are they amped up all the time where, you know, they want to go break doors down and throw out, you know, or you got this guy that's actually reading a book while they're sitting in the fire station and say, hey, did you see this? You know, or did you watch those guys the other way? I saw the way they packed the hose. Let's try this one here. Because there is a definite difference. And to me, the fire service is no longer the 19th century. We don't no longer have flying Zouaves with Fu Manchu mustaches and we're flying through the air. Because the scenario has changed. Our platform has changed. You guys have got a far more dangerous career ahead of you than I ever had. So I want to look at people who can adapt, and I think that's the key word. You need people who are willing to be open to things that are exposed to so that they can, in fact, lead this next generation.
Thanks, Mike. We've got another question. This will be our last question from the audience. Come on up.
How are you guys? I work in a small suburban department in Ohio. I'm humbled by all the education, and I think it's great. I think doctorate, having multiple master's degrees, I think that you need those things. My question has went through several different phases, to the point where your chief needs to speak up, to the point about the promotional process at all levels, lieutenant, captain, battalion, whatever it may be. I feel that the promotional processes have got a lot better. I think that, you know, you do a skills testing, you do a education testing, you do a assessment center to make sure that people know what they're supposed to do. I think what we're missing, and I guess what I'm asking you guys, is are we missing an accountability factor at all levels? A guy possesses a lot of good traits to be a lieutenant, to be a captain battalion, even at the chief's level. He has EFO certification. He's been designated as a chief fire officer through the credentialing, but the guy just can't put it together, whether it's lieutenant, whether it's chief, or whatever.
That almost kind of ties to the question earlier of all the training but no practical experience. Can you take all that, and now can you go to a fire, put it out, not get anybody hurt, yada, yada. Go ahead.
And you're exactly on track with what I'm saying. I guess my point is that the higher you promote, at a lieutenant, you're still accountable a lot of ways. You're accountable to your captain. You go to a captain level, you're accountable to a battalion chief, so you get a little bit more freedom. You go to a battalion chief, and basically, at least in the organization I'm in, you're not really accountable to anybody. So where's the standard, or how can we implement a standard? Can we implement a standard that shows that I'm still doing my job, and even higher? Because as a deputy chief, basically, you have nothing.
Yeah.
I hope I'm making sense. I know I'm rambling. It just kind of evolved.
Very good.
There.
Rich, thoughts? Mike? It's a good question.
Very good question.
Well, I didn't want to jump. You know, I don't want to seize control of the podium.
Well, speak anyway.
Well, first I would
then
say.
Then we'll pass it on to Chief Vlad.
No, I would say, first off, we're using the word he a lot, and I think
we'll
we need
about
to
everybody,
appreciate the fact that,
that
there's a lot of good females out there, that's my sensitive side now. But I think we need to recognize, because in reality, the people that are now coming into your organization might not be the same as your dads or your grandfathers. And you need to understand, there's some good firemen. I had some real good female firemen. Now, I would always tell them, look, I use the word guys, and I don't make me keep saying, and that includes, because if it does that, then you know what, our trust factor is up. But I think accountability, a couple months ago I wrote an article, and it said keeping chief officers accountable. And it was mainly speaking about firefighter fatalities. But if you want to be a boss, it's about being responsible, not about power. And I think, you know, the fire service needs to look at this thing that if you're going to be a boss, Dennis said it a little bit earlier, you're going to be a CEO of an organization.
That's right.
You know, you're managing money. You're managing people's lives. And if you think you can do that by the seat of your pants, I don't see that. So to me, the higher education, it's available far more than 30 years ago. You know, 30 years ago, there's very, very few educational programs. Dennis's National Fire Academy has FESHI. And has a great guy, Kaplan, who has developed this distance learning. And distance learning is now being accepted. And we first looked at that, and nobody wanted to touch it.
Right.
Until the universities,
it's real training. It's
until
real
the universities
degree.
Began yeah. to realize, I could 500 people online or 50 people in a classroom, but I can still charge you money. So now the university systems, but Dennis's thing with FESHI and Kaplan have made us great opportunities to take higher education. But I don't care how high up the food chain you go, you need to have accountability. But you're exactly right. Battalion chiefs, and this isn't just there. I think we can safely say across all three cities, battalion chiefs really are where the rubber meets the road as far as management goes. And sometimes, if left to their own devices, it might not be a positive.
I think I know where your question's from, and let me kind of enhance it. You can nod because you're not at the microphone, then I'll pass it on to Chief Blattis. You're talking about maybe you, and not your organization specifically, of course, but you've got a fire department, you've got a chief, you've got a deputy, an assistant chief, but things still aren't working. Houses are still burning down. Training still isn't getting done. Accidents are happening. Men and women are being injured. So they've got all these credentials and all these letters and all this training, but they're still not properly running the organization. The response to that is that everyone needs to be accountable to somebody, and whether it be a board of commissioners, a city council, a township trustees, or in a career organization, the union asking the questions, or in a volunteer organization, a volunteer association asking the questions. Hey, you got all this training, but you and the deputy and the assistant chief, for all three, you're always fighting with each other all the time. Things aren't getting done in the organization. We're screwing up at fires. We're not functioning here, coach. You got all this training. It's not working. And I think those kind of questions have to be asked carefully, you know, with respect, or do it through a union, do it through a third party, do it through a volunteer association. But, hey, you know, they buy your trucks, they buy your equipment, they pay the chief $100,000 a year. And it's the service. The bottom line is, are the fires being put out? Are the lives being saved? It's the only reason we're here. And I happen to live in a town where the houses have been burning down frequently lately. I'm not. That's not my own department. That's been an embarrassment. And now finally they're asking the questions. And I think they're going to fix it. But accountability came after numerous houses burned down. It's a shame. And the right firefighters are in that organization. The coaching staff sucks.
Mike, sensitive side. I think it goes back to where we started almost this conversation, and we talked about the promotional process, and Dennis is correct. We have a good promotional process. I would just like to see it expanded, and Billy, you touched on it. You know, maybe when you get through the testing process, then there's a final month-long, 2-month-long, 3-month-long evaluation system where we Now we have to look at, do you have what it takes to make those tough decisions?
Well, they have probation periods, but everybody comes off probation.
Everybody comes off probation.
I mean, or let's extend it. Bullshit alarm. Do not extend probation.
I don't want a
but
probation
that's the subject
period.
Of another class.
I don't want a probation period. I want an evaluation process that's going to determine whether you get there or not. Probation is, you're already there.
Well, as Dennis has said, everything is steps, pieces.
Let me, if I may, add to this a little bit. If we look at the models that nursing and medicine follow, what happens even after you get your degree and you're admitted to practice, you're expected to continue your education, and there are boards of professional practitioners who determine whether you keep your license or not. So if you do something wrong, if you, that brain surgeon we were talking about before, decides to go in after a baseball game with dirty hands and starts to operate on your brain, somebody's going to say, whoa, and they're going to pull your ticket to practice. So what Richie's talking about in terms of training and education and development, taking one step further, it's you're not there. You don't finish up the probationary period and you're a brain surgeon for life. You got to continually show performance. And that's, think, what you're
talking about. Absolutely. My daughter's into martial arts, 15 years old. When she went for her black belt, they don't let you test at your school.
Right.
They take you out of there and send
you
somewhere else
even know. That's
to see if you know what you're doing, or they're just kind of pushing you through. Yeah. And maybe that's what we need to do.
You know, you talk about the same story I was telling about this town and this fire department was burning a lot of stuff down, and the incidents were going terribly. They very recently suspended the deputy from going to fires. It was a light at the end. Wow, someone understands. You're going to stay in the office. You're not going to fires anymore. Wow. I was like, there's hope here. So, well, listen, we got to wrap it up. What a good program and what great guests. Again, what's the answer? It's out there. As the commercial says, it's in there. It's available. From the National Fire Academy to the local college to reading magazines every month. And I'm not pushing anyone. Read the magazines. There's training from people like this in there. Go online. Get to the .coms, firehouse.com, firefighterclosecalls.com, friendsreading.com, whatever it is. The information's there. The National Fire Academy online programs, conferences. And probably one of the best is, I think Chief Smith, Mike said in the beginning, talk to each other. Find out what everybody else is doing. Before we end the program, I want to put my thoughts and prayers out to some of my own. We had a fire, a mutual aid we responded to last night. Several members were burned. It looks like a backdraft, some sort of a fire phenomena occurred at this fire. Some very seasoned and experienced and trained and qualified fire officers. But something didn't go right, but luckily everybody survived. So our thoughts and prayers go out to the Madeira Indian Hill Fire Department, the Sycamore Township Fire Department, the Deer Park Silverton Fire Department, and my own, the Loveland Sims Fire Department, where one of my own is hospitalized right now with some burns, but it looks like everybody's going to come out of it fine. My sincere thanks to Dr. Dennis O'Neill, Battalion Chief Richie Blattis, retired Deputy Chief Mike Smith. Check out Mike's book, Building Construction Methods, Materials for the Fire Service. It's available through Brady. Spend time at the Fire Academy. Reach out when you see Dr. O'Neill floating around there. He's usually just walking around using his BlackBerry, wandering through campus. Anyway, so please reach out. He's a firefighter. He's glad to talk to you. And again, all of you, Dr. O'Neill, Chief Blattis, Chief Smith, thank you very much. And thanks to our audience for being here. God bless all of you. This is Radio at Firehouse.com. This is Through the Smoke. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. We're live in Baltimore at Firehouse Expo. Thank you.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.